The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bazong.
This is Bazong, the Bizarre Weird Fiction Podcast, with me, your host, Mr. Frank Zongers. So wonderful to see you back. It's May. It's May Day. Not like, oh no, we're in trouble, but it's like the 1st of May. Isn't that May Day? Isn't that the day that you're supposed to go out and get all the fancy and stuff? Well, hey. If it's May Day and you have to get dressed up to run around the Maypole, I can think of no better look than a brand new look for the May Day festivities from subculturecoursesandclothing.com, Zongers. Hey, you knew it was coming. It's the only way to get yourself all fancified for the May Day prance around the Maypole. And you know, we talk about subculture week after week, and I'm spotlighting all their wonderful stuff, but we never talk about the courses themselves, which I really want to spotlight this week for you, Zongers. Head on over to subculturecorsets.com, and you can see their full line of corsets. And who knew there were so many different kinds of corsets? You just click on the corsets tab on their website, and you find the overbust corsets, the underbust corsets, the waist training corsets. There's pin-up corsets, alternative corsets, and steampunk corsets. So it ain't just the clothes. It's all steampunk, pin-up, goth, all that stuff. It's the corsets as well. There is so much to learn about corsets. Where do you even start? As a fan of ladies, I'd like to start with the underbust corsets. And right away, when you click there, you see the Silver Stag Versailles underbust corset from Subculture. These are just alluring looking things. I never understood like the whole corset thing, but they're just, they're like pieces of artwork, all of them. And as you know, Subculture corsets, they only get the best corsets there are. It's all steel boned. None of that plastic stuff that's going to lose its shape after you wear it a couple times. This is steel boned. It's going to last you a long, long time. It's an investment in your look. So check out subculturecorsets.com. They're available in sizes 4 through 4X. Everybody is covered. They have men's clothing. They have shoes and accessories as well. And of course, if you visit their store in Jacksonville, Florida, the Avenues Mall, or if you check their stuff out online at subculturecorsets.com, don't forget to use the discount code BAZONG, and you will get 10% off your entire order. So you know what that means. The more you buy, the more you save at Subculture Corsets and Clothing, the fine sponsors of BAZONG and the Project Entertainment Network. And it's because of the fine folks at Subculture Corsets that we're able to bring you this week's guest, Zongers. Return guest this week, and happy to have him back on. He's come a long way, baby, as they say. When we originally brought him on to Bazong, I presented him really as like a super fan. You know, he just had a new book out called Joy, but really he came on my radar because of what he was doing for the bizarro genre. He worked at a local bookstore, a local independent bookstore, who had one of those billboards outside of their store where they could, you know, make up your own little, take all the letters up there and hang them up like a marquee. And he was putting up bizarro quotes there week after week, promoting different bizarro people. Got the store to add a bizarro section to their shelves. And, you know, he was just a super fan, and also trying to cut his own teeth on writing. And he's since done that. He's just come out with his second book, The Water Babies. And I'm talking about none other than Mr. Russell Holbrook. Everybody loves Russell because he's just a swell, swell guy who actually has really good writing chops. So we brought Russell back on to talk about the Water Babies, talk about how his career is going in the bookstores. He's had a change of scenery, different bookstore now, but still working for the bookstores. Still doing out there, still stumping for Bizarro, in addition to now really solidifying his position as a writer of Bizarro and dark fiction as well. So, without further pleasantries, I present to you the Bizong interview number 2 of Russell Holbrook. I'll give us the gong. I'd like to welcome back to Bizong this week a guy he's been on the show quite a while back, and he was brought on sort of as a presented more as a super fan. But now I think, you know, with his second book out and he's got a lot more work out there in anthologies and stuff, we can present him now as like the totally legit. He's the writer guy, right? He's the writer guy now. So welcome back to Bizong as the writer guy, the one and only Mr. Russell Holbrook. Russell, welcome back to Bizong.
Hey, Frank. Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here. Glad to be back.
I'm always happy to have you around. Like, you're, I say you're the writer, but you're still always a big stumper for everybody out there in the Bizarro community, Bizarro work in general. You're still out there doing that good work, but now, you know, you're continuing your work as a writer. The latest thing you have out is called The Water Babies. You want to talk about what The Water Babies is?
Sure. It actually came out on Slash House Fiction, which is a new imprint that was started up by Noah Patterson, and then he passed it off to Alex Johnson and Chris Thompson, and those are the guys who do the Floppy Shoes Apocalypse series that I've been a part of, and it came out in December, but we're still like trying to get the word out about it, and it's a book that was based on a local legend here in South Cobb County. I mean, I heard it when I was 10. It's about these mutant children that live in the woods next to a covered bridge that was built in like the 1800s. And the story is, if you drive your car into the bridge late at night and you turn off the lights and you put candy up on the roof, that the water babies, these deformed monster children, will come and take the candy and run away. And you'll have handprints on your car and stuff. I don't know how far it goes back, but I heard it when I was 10. And even my friend's parents who grew up in the area were familiar with the story. And so I just thought it would be really fun to, like, write a book using that as like a springboard, you know. And one of the deals with Slash House was that when they put out the call for submissions, they wanted it to be an homage to like the 80s slasher films. And so there was a set of like criteria that you had to meet, and it was like you had to have a group of teenagers in an isolated setting and all that good stuff. And so the Water Babies worked with that, and I was able to work within that framework. And then I wrote the book, and they put it out.
Now, did you have the book already written, or was it, and you're like, oh, this fits that call, that submission call, or is it something you pitched and worked on after the acceptance?
No, well, I didn't have it written at all, but I saw the submission call, and then I had, you know, I got the idea, and so I wrote the first chapter in like a week, I think, and then pitched it to them, and it was accepted, and it went from there.
So, yeah, it was something in the back of your head. You think you would have wrote this story regardless of, you know, that opportunity coming up to pitch it?
Yes, because it was on my list of books to write. I have a list, like, posted in the office here. And actually, back in 2007 or 2008, a friend of mine and I were really into making these homemade horror movies and shooting them on digital video and all that stuff. And so we wanted to make a Water Babies movie. And one night, he and I talked about how it would be great to make a film out of each local legend that we've grown up with. Like, the road he lives on, there's a there's supposed to be this ghost that walks across the road and causes accidents at this, because they live at the top of the hill, like a blind hill. And then there's like the witch's graveyard, which is another good one. And then there's the water babies. And so I wanted to do it for a long time. And originally it was going to be a film script. And then I got into writing books and short stories as opposed to scripts. And so that's how I did it as a book. But I'd love to see it made into a movie. And people keep telling me, oh, this would make a great movie. But that would be a lot of fun, but we'll see.
So you've had aspirations to get into filmmaking?
I did before I got into to pursuing writing seriously, because I went from when I was in my teens and early 20s, I was really into music, and then I went from music to like visual art, and from visual art to filmmaking, and from filmmaking to writing. And it's like the last film I made was in 2010, and then I started writing a script for Joy, and that was in 2012, and I was like, I just don't want to go through all the steps it takes to make a movie. Even if you make a tiny movie, you have to get all these people together, and you have to get props, and then you mix up the special effects stuff, and then you get actors, and you tell everyone what to do. But when you write it, you're just sitting in a room by yourself. And I get the same kind of satisfaction writing that I used to get when I would just sit down with my 4-track recorder and record these weird little tapes, you know? And so also, like, writing was my favorite part of the filmmaking process. And I read somewhere once that, you know, if you're, like, you should find your what you most enjoy about the filmmaking process and stick with that. And so I was like, well, I just do writing. And then in 2012, I discovered NaNoWriMo, where you write a book in a month in November. And are you familiar with that?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Okay. And so I decided to do that, and that's when I wrote the first part of the first draft for Joy. And then I really never looked back after that, because I was so into it. So I did have aspirations to become a filmmaker, but then I kind of lost interest in it. And that's the story with that.
That's pretty cool. You were pursuing the filmmaking thing, but ultimately you found that the writing part of the gig was your deal.
Yes, yeah. I found out that's what I enjoyed the most. And it also, like, it's just so, I don't know, it's so comforting, and it seems strange, but it's like being alone with my imagination is so exciting and satisfying to me.
So are you the type of guy you're right by the seat of your pants, or do you like to plot out?
I like to have an outline, but then I don't try to stick to it necessarily. Like the Water Babies was completely outlined, and I ended up going way off course with it. But it worked out well. I mean, my wife doesn't believe me when I say this, but I always say that the book has the ultimate authority, you know, and like it's so hard to explain, but yeah, so I can make a plan, but it's not guaranteed that I'll be able to stick with it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, right? Of course. The story tells itself, you know. Sometimes it pulls you as it's being written. It's like, no, it's going this way, and you just have to follow that gut where it's telling you it wants to go.
Yeah, and I think the more that we write, you know, the more that we get in tune with the process, then we're able to hear the story clearer. And I've been, you know, listening to other writers speak and other interviews for like the last several years. And I was always fascinated when people say, like, you know, the writer would say, this is what the characters wanted or what the characters told me to do. And I was like fascinated by that. Like, how's that possible? But now it makes sense to me, and I love it when you get that like flash of insight and the story just takes off. That's really exciting. So I would never like favor an outline over that sense of spontaneity. But yeah, I try to do, I make notes and stuff, and so as long as I'm working on something, it's always playing in my mind, like all day, every day, and so I can just write a little note about whatever pops up. And I have the Water Babies is longer. I mean, sorry, the newest book I'm working on is longer than the Water Babies, and I have like a list of events written down, and so that's kind of a guide. But I'm actually novelizing an old film script right now, and so it was already plotted out basically, but there's still lots of new stuff coming into it, so that's pretty exciting.
Now, when we last spoke with you, you had published Joy, you'd self-published Joy through Riot Forge, and now you're working with Jesus, it escapes me. Who's your publisher again? Slash House. My apologies. what was the do you have a preference now that you've worked with a publisher? Do you like working with a publisher better? It's just a different experience. You'd self-publish again. How did all that work out for you?
Well, working with Slash House is really similar to working with Riot Forge, because it's just like a bunch of friends working together. And so it's really similar. And but I love having the help of someone helping with the formatting. You know, I found that was really difficult, even though I had a lot of help with Joy. With the Water Babies, I was able to send the manuscript to Chris Thompson, and he formatted it, and he did all these, like, you know, the cool, like, things with the text and the headings, and it looks really cool. And so I'm really grateful for that, and he did an awesome job of that, and that's really nice to not have to worry about that. And especially when someone else like does it better than I ever could, you know?
Yeah.
But it's so similar because, I don't know, I think Riot Forge is almost like a small press, but I mean, it truly is a collective, and it's really cool. And, Slash House has that same collective spirit, and it's a group of people who help each other and who, you know, want to put our stories out. And so it's really similar. I don't see like that much difference actually. And as far as the promotion and marketing and all that goes, it's very similar, except, the Slash House guys have sent me copies of the book, which has been immensely helpful. And, but yeah, it's, I guess, I don't know, did I explain that well?
Yeah. Well, it seems to me like, you didn't feel there was a giant, separation of the process, I guess, where the publishing process working, with Riot Forge and having those people help you out as opposed to the publisher who's really, you know, it's their job, obviously, to make the book look its best if they're going to sell it and you're all going to make money together.
Right. But it's still so, like, it's also indie, you know, it just, it's, I mean, to me, and the whole, it's still very DIY.
Right.
But I don't know what it would be like, you know, if, to put something out with, like, a big publisher. I would probably be a lot more removed from the process. But I love working with, like, you know, Chris Thompson and Alex at Slash House, because you're together like every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah.
So you feel you'd continue to look for or sell your books through a publisher, like the, being a preference as opposed to taking the self-publishing route, just because you have that team behind you?
Well, I'd like to do both, being whichever works best. Like, I want to do a short story collection with Riot Forge this summer. And Matthew Vaughn and I have been discussing it, and I'm really, really hoping he can do the cover art for it, because we discussed some ideas, and he has the perfect vision for it. It would be a lot of fun, too. And so I want to keep, like, working with those guys, and I want to find a way to be more helpful to, like, the other guys and girls and everybody at Riot Forge. And, like, I don't know how much I have to contribute, but because I'm not very, like, computer literate yet, but anything I can do to help, I would like to do that. But, yeah, but I love, like, working with the Flash House guys, too. I feel very fortunate to be able to do that. But I want to do both, you know, and I hope that we're going to have, like, some sort of publishing schedule set up with Riot Forge. I mean, Slash House, sorry. And, but I love working with, like, the small presses. It's awesome.
Now, you, last time we spoke with you, you were working for an independent bookstore where you had access to a little billboard sign they had outside where you were sharing quotes from bizarre authors out there on the billboards, and you know, something that drew attention to you in the community that you were doing that good work and promoting everybody and the genre. You've since relocated to a different bookstore. I guess they don't have a billboard outside that you can play with, but I see now that you're doing book signings in this new bookstore. How has that worked out for you?
Oh, it's been cool. I've only participated in one there so far, and it was small, but I mean, I was glad to go meet some other local authors and just to get out there. And yeah, we don't have a sign there, but I've talked to the owner about Bizarro, and we have our little Bizarro section started up now, and it's kind of annexed to the horror section. And but the signing, that was pretty cool. And I hope to do, like, more of those. And I was able to also participate in another signing for the Water Babies at another independent bookstore, which is actually in Smyrna, which is the town that the covered bridge is in, and that's where the story is set. And but it's just, like, right down the road, and that went well. And then I also participated in a signing and a reading at the Book House yesterday, which is where I did work, where I was able to put the quotes on the sign.
What's been your experience at the book signing, selling physical copies? Do you find it easier sell than trying to push ebooks on social media?
I think both are probably equally difficult. But it just seems like if someone wants to buy it, they'll buy it. And I was able to, at the signing at the bookstop in Smyrna, someone who I had never met before just wandered in and bought a copy of The Water Babies after we talked about horror for a minute. And it turned out he was also a lifelong horror fan. So actually, I guess in that regard, it is easier because you get to speak to someone face to face and make that connection. And as far, yeah, when you're, you know, just like trying to sell an ebook or trying to sell online, it's almost like throwing rocks into a dark room or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, but now that you mention it, I would agree. I mean, I would say that it's easier and, like, more meaningful to be able to discuss the books with someone in person. And so you make a connection, because to me, like, books are more than just entertainment. They have meaning, and you put your heart into them, even if they're silly or just some kind of freaky, like, horror bizarro that people, some people may think it's total trash, but, you know, to you, there's personal meaning in it. And if you can convey that to someone, that makes the whole experience more meaningful. And it's not just some kind of sales transaction, you know?
Yeah, no, it's something. It's something personal. I found the same sort of experience, like you said, that having it wasn't the book that you sold. You sort of sold yourself. You're in that situation face to face, and you struck up a conversation, you know, about horror, and you shared that love of horror, and you sold yourself to that customer, and they were like, okay, well, let me take a chance. This guy's cool. He knows his stuff about horror, and we had this cool conversation. I found the same thing doing some conventions and signing events is it's that opportunity when you can stop somebody or they come talk to you, and it could be about anything. You could be talking about music. You could be talking about horror movies, books, anything. I sold a book because I was talking about zombie walks. It's that social interaction, and that's when you're selling yourself. That's really like, that zombie walk one. I was blown away because it was a couple, and they stopped, and they were just stopping and being polite because I said hi to them, and we basically, you could tell they wanted to move on, and the wife was like, I don't really read that stuff, and they kind of wanted to go, but I started talking about the zombie walk, and it clicked. They were into zombie walks and stuff, and I'm talking, oh, I do this one over here in Asbury Park, and you got to go, and we wound up having a really cool conversation about all these zombie walks and stuff, and the guy goes, you know what? You're really cool. I mean, just what book do you recommend? I want to take a chance on you. And I sold the book to him just because of that. You know, it was not in the market for a book, but we had a really good connection and a nice conversation, and it turned into a book sale. Hopefully the guy goes home and reads the book, but, you know, it's that it's that type of thing.
Cool, man. That's awesome.
Now, the bookstore itself, you said you've got them to do a bizarro section again, added into their little horror section, which is something you did at the previous bookstore as well. Are you finding now that you've done this feat again that the bookstore owners are actually kind of receptive to it? Like they got, I got to imagine you're introducing them to something they're not really aware of, right?
Yes, and thankfully they are receptive of it, and I was honestly a little bit surprised, but the owner has been very receptive and supportive, and even when, you know, some used books may come in and she'll ask me, is this bizarro or is this weird fiction or is this weird enough? And then one day we had the conversation about what exactly makes a bizarro book a bizarro book. And there's this series, I wish that I could remember the author, but this author takes old nursery rhymes and makes them into murder mysteries. And they are, like, kind of out there. The one that we have at the store is called The Third Bear, I think, and it's about the bears, you know, that live in the house where Goldilocks, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Goldilocks and the Three Bears, and So the third bear goes missing, or I don't know, something, but she was like, is this bizarro? And, you know, I don't know. I always think bizarro usually has some more of like a transgressive element, or it has to, you know, some sort decidedly un-mainstream element. But
that would be almost, to me, that sounds like, you know, almost like what Wicked was. It was a twisted fairy tale. More so than bizarro, but really, I mean, you could slap bizarro label on anything that is kind of weird. But I guess if you want to serve the genre properly, you really do want to kind of make those lines a little bit clearer and not just call anything a little offbeat, call it bizarro.
Yeah. But we have a little section, and right now we have, we have Pax Titanus by Tom Lucas, and we have Baby Hater, the classic by Stevie Hunt.
Oh,
we have the Chunks Anthology, which is actually touted as Bark Zorro because everybody in the anthology just wrote the weirdest, grossest story they could think of. Mm-hmm. And then there's like, was it Scott Cole that wrote, Super Ghost?
Yes.
Yeah, we have Super Ghost. And, oh my gosh. We have a few more that I can't drawing a blank. Oh, we have some Jeff O'Brien up in there, of course.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
We actually put, Splatterhouse Rules in the horror section though, because, I mean, I know it toes the line, but, I don't know, Jeff O'Brien is kind of his own genre at this point, but I think she put it in the horror though.
Well, he himself, I think, says that's more, straight horror than it is any kind of weird cultish or bizarro type of a book.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But,
well, what's nice too is you're sourcing books not from, you know, a traditional distribution network. You know, you're getting these writers to send you some books to put them on the shelves, which is, you know, that's a tremendous opportunity that you're not going to get every day. So that's awesome that you're able to do that. And you were, you know, you've moved on to a different bookstore and you're still able to get that deal going. And I mean, that's just huge, tremendous. And you're not just doing it for yourself. Like you're doing it for, you know, everybody that you can try and help out. That's awesome stuff.
Cool. Thank you. I just want to, I'm not a marketing guy and I just wish that I could think of some ways to draw more people into the store. And, you know, cause I love it when people come in and I get to show them around the store and I'm like, here's the horror section, here's the Zorro, and let me know if you have any questions. But I just wish like more young people would come in. I mean, it's in this little town called Powder Springs, which is, it's still kind of a country town. Mm-hmm. And, even though like the bookstore itself, I feel is really progressive. And, of course, the owner is not afraid to take chances on new fiction and other genres as well. And, I just wish that I could figure out a way to spread the word in a more effective way. But, I don't know.
Well, like I said, just you making that exist, you know, getting that bizarro bookshelf to exist. That's all you have to do, man. You've done your work there. And then, of course, you say, like, you're walking around the store, you're like, and this is the bizarro section. Any questions? You know, and try to get that conversation going. How, I guess you're saying kind of like in this small town America, they're a little skittish about experimenting with the bizarro yet. It's a little bit of a harder sale anyway.
Well, unfortunately, yes. I mean, because every time I talk to someone in the sci-fi or fantasy section, I think that, oh yeah, this person will definitely go for bizarro, but they usually don't, which I don't know why it surprises me that they think, oh, that's just too strange or, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that can be that's, I don't know. It almost seems universal at times where, you know, people are like a little like, you know, a little over the top, a little too weird. Even things you don't even think are even remotely, you know, that weird or over the top. So more straight laced people are going to be like, I don't know if I can handle that kind of weird.
Right.
How about yourself? Like, obviously, you have to have your own books on the shelf there, too. Do you find like people knowing like, oh, you're the guy writing it? You get a kind of a little bit of a better sale there?
Yes, that's happened with people who know me, and especially since I worked at the bookhouse for so long, people have been going there and buying copies of the Water Babies lately, which is, that's really encouraging. And yeah. At the Bookworm, the new store where I work, the owner has like introduced me as a writer and she's like, oh, we have his books here. And that's helped to sell a copy of Joy. And, but I don't get that much opportunity to discuss it because just, you know, there aren't that many customers that come in looking for horror or some dark fiction, like specifically. I tell everyone about it that I'm able to, but it's just like that town is mostly like old people and religious people and then like kids, you know. Big part of the business is school reads and like summer reading and that kind of thing.
Well, I imagine though, like the water baby you're saying is like a local legend. You must have like, at least with that book specifically, like the recognition, like, oh, you wrote a story about that thing.
Oh yes. Yeah. It is starting to take off a little bit more, especially because of that element. And, people from my high school that I went to school with that know the story have been buying it. And, I want to make some posters and stuff and try to get the word out more about it. And, you've heard the legend, now read the book or something like silly like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be awesome to like, model the posters after like those old, you know, 50s posters that were like, blood, terror, teenage depravity, or, you know, they would, and exclamation points.
Uh-huh, like the old driving horror movies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would be really cool.
That would be great to use that style. And, but yeah, like having that angle and having it tied into local folklore really helps. And one of, like, my favorite compliment that people have given me, they're just like, that's so cool that you did that. Like, no one's written a book about this stuff yet, and we grew up with this, but you turn it into a book, that's awesome. So that's a huge compliment, and I really appreciate that. But it's a lot of fun, and I feel like a lot of us that grew up here, we were like, oh, this town sucks, I can't wait to get out of here. But now that I'm older, like, I find like a rich history here and a lot of stuff I never appreciated.
Yeah.
Fully, you know.
So it's almost like that thing you have, that little small town thing. This is our thing, and it's kind of cool. Like you're putting this out there. You might be doing something to help put us on the map. Like, this is our thing. The water babies. Yeah.
It's like our Jersey Devil. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like I'm. Like, once I, like, realized that and I found out about more of the, like, insidious history of the immediate area where we live, I was, like, really excited. I thought it was really cool. I mean, not to sound too morbid, but, there's, like, a certain darkness here that I like.
Yeah. Just the tone of the geography.
Yes.
Yeah. And it sounds like you mentioned too, like you want to kind of explore other local legends that are around too, which is, it sounds to me like a good, at least locally, a good marketing angle. You know, there's people that are going like, oh yeah, I know that. That's awesome. You wrote a story about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of fun, and I hope to not pay, you know, not as like an homage, but like I would like to kind of like give props to the local stories, or like honor it, I guess you could say. You know,
well, it's a good angle to take, because you don't have to build that backstory. The backstory's there, and then you could just work off of it or you know, twist it to your own needs to make the story newer, fresher, and something different from what the actual legend is.
Yeah, and you're right. And that's another great thing, is that it's so wide open, because there is such a minimum of information available, you know, as to like the backstory. So
right.
I just, you know, there's, you can just elaborate on it forever.
Yeah, everybody sort of has their own different version of it. So it's like, oh, no, that's not how it happened. This is how it happened.
Right, yeah. And even, in fact, like, after the Water Babies came out, we had this discussion on Facebook. And then, like, a coworker of mine at the Bookworm, she was like, oh, well, my dad said this is how the story goes. And like, it was completely different. And then I like cross-referenced that with a couple of other older people, and they were like, yeah, that's the version I heard. And some people call them the water babies or the waterhead babies or the waterheads. and so, it's kind of, there are several different versions. And then with like the witch's graveyard, that's in like the same general vicinity as the covered bridge. And that whole area is supposed to be like extremely haunted, and there's lots of bad mojo there, but it's really creepy, honestly. There's some weird vibe about it, but, like, I don't know any backstory about the witch's graveyard. I mean, and there are a lot of different versions of that, you know, about the supposed local witch who's buried there, and, so that would be a fun one too. And as far as like the marketing thing goes, like, I keep having to tell myself that you have to think about marketing, and like marketing is not like a dirty word, right. You know, and, but it is good to like have a, an angle as you said.
Yeah.
And plus like something that, people around here can relate to. It's also cool.
And it sounds like it's something like you're really into all these local things, and you're finding that local history where I want to keep my roots here and explore those things. Is we've got cool stuff here. We don't have to get out of this town. It sounds like you're into it. So it's almost like it works out as your thing. You can be that guy that writes those twisted tales of the local legends, you know, type of thing. You don't have to be exclusive to that, but you know, locally you can build an audience on that.
Yeah. I hope. They'll be like, he's disgraced our town.
Well, you could be the guy who brings, you know, the water babies to prominence. Like we have, like the Jersey Devil. It's almost like, you know, that's just famous. And there's a bazillion stories about the Jersey Devil, or Slender Man and stuff like that. These, you know, local legends that have become big. Maybe you're the guy that's going to make the water babies big, and there's going to be a whole slew of water baby stories.
That would be awesome. I would totally dig that.
see, that's the thing. That's why you gotta keep doing that thing. That would be cool. I mean, when you were first talking about like what the water babies legend is, it does give you a chill, like to hear about the kids and they're coming up and they're eating your candy and leaving streaks on the windows. That gives you a chill because you know we all have those local legends, and you go out in your car or you go exploring them, then you could just remember those points when you're a kid exploring those things, and it just it's totally creepy, like definitely chill inducing.
Right, it is really creepy down there, and like even like adult like people my age, they're like, I'm not gonna go down there at night, you know. It's almost funny that it is. I don't know. There's something about that place that. Yeah, it's like I'm not going to go into the Pine Barrens at night, you know. But
yeah, it is. It's the Pine Barrens can be creepy. It's weird for like New Jersey. You often think of, you know, something a little more suburban or even urban, but there's this whole swath of the state in the South that's you might as well be in the middle of nowhere of South Carolina or Idaho, because it's really desolate, and you kind of forget that there still is that ruralness to the at least part of the state, and it's dark and there's no streetlights, and it's every bit as creepy as the middle of the backwoods in the center of the country, you know.
Yeah, that is really amazing.
So we're getting close to the end. I got to ask you. You touched on it a bit, but what's the future have in store for you, Russell, as far as writing and releasing books and stories?
Well, I was able to work on a new book with Jeff O'Brien. It's called Crust, and it's coming out on New Kink Books, and it's one of those bizarro erotica books, one of them dirty books.
Now, did you collaborate with Jeff O'Brien on that?
Well, he did the editing on it. But, I really owe him because, like, he read another story of mine, like, way back, a few months back, and he pointed out that there were, like, these elements of the story that could be expanded on and how you can take a detail and kind of blow it up. And I had just never seen it in that way. And I had been working on Crust already, and so I was like, hey, I could do that to Crust. And so I worked on it, and then Jeff went, like, it was going to be out on Riot Forge, and then Jeff was like, what about U-Kink? And so I sent it to them, and thankfully they liked it. And then, like, it was all finished and it was going to come out, and it turned out I had sent them the wrong manuscript. I had sent them, I don't know how this happened. I'm so embarrassed. I felt so terrible because they had to, like, Don and Nick had to pull it off of Amazon and, like, switch the manuscript because I had sent them, like, the original 12,000 word manuscript. And then after the conversation with Jeff and the editing and everything, it was over 20,000 words.
Uh-huh.
And, so then it was, like, reformatted and everything. I believe it's going to be out really soon. It was out, but then it wasn't, and it will be out again.
The correct version will be out very soon.
Yeah. But I'm so grateful for those guys and their willingness to work with someone who's such a novice as me. And, but I'm really happy with it, and I hope lots of people read it. And then, in the summer, hopefully I'll get a short story collection out. And, then working on a new book right now. I'm into the third act of that, and that might be the second Slash House book. It doesn't have anything to do with the Water Babies or a local legend though. And then after that, I'd like to, write a sequel to The Water Babies. And then, you know, whatever else comes to mind. Like, I have a bunch of songs that I'd like to get a bunch of bizarro and horror musicians to, work on an album together. That would be a lot of fun. And, but I don't know, we'll see, I want to keep learning about marketing and getting my name out there and not being afraid to promote myself, I guess you could say. I mean, that's not the ultimate goal, but, like, I do, like, want people to read my stuff, so gotta get better about, I'm so afraid, like, I'm just, like, so timid about saying, hey, I wrote this book, but I'm learning about, like, getting better about that, you know.
Yeah, well, that's just, I mean, you have to get out there and do it. I had those same sort of reservations, but, you know, once you have to get out there and do it. I'm shocked, you know, in my own work at how much easier it is for me to move paperback editions face-to-face to people as opposed to trying to push ebooks on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. It's leaps and bounds different, and because it's working out so well at me, I'm a lot more excited about it. And then, you know, when you're excited about it, you're more loose and into the process of just trying to, you know, market your book to people out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I gotta say, Russell, I read Joy. It was fantastic. It was definitely a bit of writing business, you know, it's a whole drug fueled thing, and you really you get into that zone, like you almost feel like you're on the drugs too. It's that kind of trippiness, and I can't wait to dig into The Water Babies. Like I said, I got chills, and I got the book in my hand, and I'm gonna tear into that soon. You know, you're saying you're a novice and everything, but you got a bunch of short stories out there in the anthologies. You got two of your own books out. And you've got plenty of work that's going to be coming down the pipe. So, you know, don't think of yourself as a novice. Think of you're doing the thing now, and you have the talent, sir, to keep on going with it. And you're not the novice. You are Russell Holbrook, the Bizarro writer extraordinaire.
Thank you. I'll do my best.
So everybody out there, definitely check out Russell Holbrook. And Russell, thank you for joining us again on Bizong. Best to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Frank.
Russell Holbrook, Zongers. Don't let his modesty fool you about, you know, being a new writer and everything. The dude has really good writing chops. I read Joy. Like I said, it was like actually doing drugs. He has a real knack for putting you in a weird mind space with his prose. Good stuff. I can't wait to dig into the Water Babies. Like I said, when he described that, that's a chill inducing plot. Definitely have to check that out too. Hope you Zongers do as well. And Zongers, let's talk about the Project Entertainment Network. First of all, it's May 1st, but right at the end of every month on Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page, I put up the monthly Bizong Bizarro Books Spotlight video exclusively for the contributors of Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page. So for just a mere dollar a month, you get access to my Mr. Frank's Bizarro Books Spotlight every month, in addition to other great value-added content from all the hosts on the Project Entertainment Network. And all you need to do is kick in $1 a month. That's just $12 a year spread out in 12 simple payments. So something to consider giving yourself a little added bonus there. Always value-added content. And just for a couple bucks more, you could win show notes and you could get special advertising deals on the network shows. You could win all kinds of swag and stuff like that. So consider helping out the network and contributing to Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page. In addition to that, if you're into the Project Entertainment Network, why don't you go over to their store? That's right, projectentertainmentnetwork.com. Click on the shop tab. We've got all kinds of t-shirts from your favorite Project Entertainment podcast, including Bizong, actual Bizong Network merchandise now, Zongers. So you can look good in your Bizong t-shirt or get a mug, get some stickers. It's all there for you. All the shows across the network. And of course, since the network is so wonderful and huge and important and you love it, why not consider selling your product, your wares, or yourself by advertising on the Project Entertainment Network and your favorite podcast like Bizong? All you got to do is go to projectentertainmentnetwork.com, click on the advertising tab, and follow the instructions on how to get your ad copy into our hands and get yourself promoted on all the fantastic podcasts here on the Project Entertainment Network, including Bizong. So I want to thank you, as always, Zongers, for tuning in, checking out the writers we're talking to this week, writing the best in the strange, weird, odd, quirky fiction. That's what we call Bizong. And now Bizong is over, and you are free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
Once upon a time, a madman, poet, and thief, known as John Urbansick, that's me, challenged myself, to write a story a day, every day, for a year, by hand. Some of them worked. Some of them failed. Some of them were spectacular. Then I did it again. Join me every week for Ink Stains as I do it a third time. And I will read you some of these stories. I'll talk about the process, about creativity in general, writing in specific, and maybe I can help ignite your artistic adventures.
I'm Captain Battersley, and I'm one of them characters in the Curtain Jerks, Project Entertainment Network's pro wrestling podcast. Every Friday, Tokyo Talk, Clark, Steve Messer, and the Viking, Superkick Pro Wrestling in the Hot Spot. Featuring interviews with the up-and-coming indie superstars that are stable and shoots while it works. You can only hear them on the Project Entertainment Network. Thank you very much. Remember the Alamo!
Thank you.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.